You're listening to the Racing TV podcast on the wire.
Open an account with BarwinRacing.com and receive a €30 or £30 free bet when you have a bet of €10 or £10 at evens or greater. T's and C's apply.
And you're very welcome along to On The Wire. It's Dante Day. It's very strange. The Dante is on. The Derby has come and gone. We'll talk about that with Brendan Duke. We're going to have Dunnock O'Brien on the show. And Dunnock was on his way actually to the races today at Navan, which is a Thursday. So just bear in mind that when you hear this, the horses will have come and gone and run and so forth. We also have Johnny Levins, an informed trainer, doing the Joy of Six. And we've an update from Dundalk Chief Jim Martin as the track resumes and new look Dundalk comes back. Fortunately, professional race scorers like yourself still housed in the homestead can't go racing.
Oh yeah. It's the same story of envy. We have people on all the time to say, oh, I'm on the way to the races. And this week we had Bellystown and Killarney. I rarely get beyond the pale, but they'd be two venues. I like things up on the hill, and of course Killarney, very picturesque venue. I remember it well, but that avenue of pleasure has been closed, and we don't know when it's going to open again. Really,
Killarney is a fantastic place to go racing.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, particularly for the likes of us who don't drive, sure, we can walk out of the town. What is it, a 10-minute walk? And I mean, say walk, it's an amble, because you're taking in the environ. And No. Now, of course, it's a fair schlep down there. You need to stay for a few days. You wouldn't be day tripping or anything.
But, no.
Although I'd walk across broken glass to go for a day at the moment. But anyway.
Yeah, I think Queen Victoria visited it back in the day, and it became a big kind of a tourist destination for a lot of people in what was then the United Kingdom of Britain and Ireland. But it's basically just taken off from there, and it's an amazing racetrack as well. Juki, what have we got to catch up on before we get to Dunnock? How has your week been on the punting front?
Yes, well, it's slightly worrying scenes. I do have this trend across my punting life, for when I'm going well on the horses, I start punting golf. It's like the decadence of the French aristocracy. You know, I'm going well, but about to lose my head when I start punting golf. So Victor Hava Hovland, ding, 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 have a time. All the shrewdies are all over this young fella, and I've been so
never heard of him.
What'll happen is... Well, of course, there's only so many sports you can follow and indeed be a pundit on. But I know golf isn't one of them, but he's a very, very promising. I think he's definitely Scandinavian. I have a feeling he's from Finland, right. But I'd have to check that. But anyway, he's a phenom. He loves bent grass greens. But there's absolutely no chance that he wins. And then I start saying, why do I bet on golf? And then I'll start backing losers on horses. That's normally what happens when I start betting on golf.
Jamie Heffernan got a bit of a ban. You said in our running order he'll be 50 by the time we see him again, which is a little bit of an exaggeration, but not that much.
Well, it is. Well, it is. Yeah. No, I quite enjoyed that one. I'm glad you used it. Yeah, and it also seems particularly harsh to me. So I know there's always a bit of a lag. So say you get the ban of a Sunday as he did, it mightn't start till the following Wednesday or something. Mm-hmm. But now they're saying, oh, he has to do his 2 weeks and then the ban kicks in. But that's completely unfair. Now, I mean, the race administrators are just looking at the world as it is, and the draconian punishments that are being dished out by governments and they're trampling all over their citizens' rights and freedoms. And so they think they can do this. But I mean, what sort of precedent does that set? Say Heffernan had got a fall in the next race and he was mm-hmm. off for a month with a broken collarbone. But they say, oh, no, we'll have to wait till that collarbone fixes itself and then you can serve your ban. I don't like this. I think they're taking absolute liberties, the French.
Bit of a mad one. In the sense that he's on a horse that ends up like basically a well-held seventh, and he does his, he really, the punishment in terms of the actual result of the race wasn't exactly fitting.
And also, I don't know how many times you're allowed to strike the horse, but it was 11. He hit it 11 times, which doesn't sound excessive. So he might have just lost count. He I mean, he didn't have a very good day. He gave Peaceful a very strange ride in the French Alps as well.
We did mention the three Irish fillies, and one of them was actually Fancy Blue, who's trained by Joseph O'Brien, or rather by Dunnock O'Brien. And Dunnock O'Brien is going to be up in a very, very short time after we hear from the two big races at Epsom at the weekend.
Love comes through to head stable companion Ennis Tyburn. Frankly Darling charging down the outside, but Love has got three or four lengths, just drifting across down the camber towards the inside running rail. Love, the 1,000 guineas winner, she's well clear. She's gone six or seven lengths clear of Ennis Tyburn in second. No impression from Frankly Darling, and Love comes right away, galloping clear in tremendous style to win the Oaks. Love and Ryan Moore, Ennis Tyburn second, a 1-2 for Aidan O'Brien. Frankly Darling never landing a blow in third, and they were clear then of Passion and Queen Daenerys. 2.5 furlongs left to cover. Emmett McNamara gets to work on Serpentine now. He's still got 8 or 10 lengths over Khalifa Sat, or on the Vian down the outside. Cabico is trying to stay on behind these. A furlong and a half left for the leader, the last home. Serpentine still by 8 to 10 lengths over Khalifa Sat, or on the Vian, Mogul and Cabico. And Serpentine is not stopping. He's made it all. He's out clear all the way. It's 6 or 7 lengths still. And Serpentine for a remarkable win in the Investec Derby. Khalifa Sat maybe second. Oran Navian and English King running on. Third and fourth probably. Cameco down the outside. And then Mogul.
Donica, how are you?
Good, thanks, Johnny. How are you?
Not so bad. We've listened back to the Derby there. I want to get your view on this from the perspective of somebody who was watching the race and also somebody who might have been riding in the race, and what your thought process would have been if you were sort of in that pack that was, you know, a little bit off the pace as Emma McNamara set the pace in Serpentine. What would have gone through your head, do you think?
Yeah, well, you're starting to, you know, from 5-6 out, you're starting to panic, really, or at least you should be. But at the same time, you know, no one's really wanting to make a move, because if you're the one that makes a move and you go after him and then you stop, then you look like the clown, you know. So it's, you just have to weigh it up in your head. And I think the guys behind were unfortunate as well, that they had two slow looking horses stuck between themselves and Serpentine in William Buick and Tom Marcand, and they couldn't really go with him. So they kind of acted as a buffer for them. And look, he just got away, and a classy stare by Galileo like him. He just kept galloping.
That's an interesting point to make about the riders. Is that one of the worst kind of scenarios that a rider can get him or herself into, where you're in that situation where you're kind of between a rock and a hard place and you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, particularly in the classic?
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose, you know, they're kind of probably all looking at each other, and when no one's moving, kind of, you know, you're starting to think, well, am I the one that's wrong here? Is he going way too quick? So, you know, when they're all kind of sitting there, it's hard to be the one to whip out and make the move. You know, it's a big call, especially if you're on a horse that you're not sure if they stay or not. And especially after the Oaks, where something similar happened and the two in front stopped. I think that probably was in the back of their minds as well. So look, it's, you know, it's easy to criticize them, but at the same time, it would have been hard to do anything else being in their position.
You're obviously still very young, but I have kind of seen your father and maybe the team that, you know, when they have a big team of horses, the pacemaking duties are a bit different to what they were, in that a lot of these pacemakers are actually quite good unexposed horses. And how good of a performance was it from the winner, did you think?
Yeah, look, I think it's unfair to call them pacemakers, to be honest with you, because yeah. I mean, he done the very same thing in the maiden. Wayne did a few days before. He let him out and he let him roll, and no one was calling him a pacemaker that day, you know what I mean? And he didn't stop. And I said to a few people to back him each way before the race, I thought he was very impressive that day. And I knew there was a chance that, them, you know, having Emmett on him and having others in the field, there was a chance they could let him off, and that's exactly what happened.
Juki, what did you make of it?
Oh, I don't know. It is interesting listening to Dunica. It does seem to have been a bit of a perfect storm. I think that Marcand was the most significant jockey in the race, because they hadn't let him get away until they started running down the hill. And then, well, Dunica thinks that maybe Khalifa Sat wasn't good enough to go with him. I think Marcand decided to take a pull then, and he didn't realise that Serpentine was set in such perfect fractions, and he let him go, and he dictates it for the rest of them. And then the rest of them are sitting in behind. I mean, you could argue that the clock in their head should have told them what was happening, but what have you got? You've got Cameco's not a certain stare. English King has blown the start, so the Tories having to reset. Mogul and Russian Emperor, I mean, what did they do? Mogul almost certainly should have been the one to go, but to use cycling parlance, he has the team made up the road. So what's he supposed to do? Vatican City isn't a guaranteed stare. Hyde and Chief and Pile Driver were both a bit keen. So what are their jockeys to do? I just think it was a perfect storm, and he's gone from being, he was about two lengths ahead of Khalifa Sat when they started to run down the hill. By the time they get to Tappan Corner, he could have been 15 lengths ahead. And so then it was just good night, wasn't it? I think what Marcon decided was that Serpentine wasn't good enough to set those fractions. So he gambled a little bit, and his gamble didn't come off.
Let's talk about the Oaks in Donegal, because this was quite an extraordinary performance, to be fair.
Yeah, she was very good. I someone told me, now I don't know if it's true or not, that if she had ran in the Derby on sectionals, she's a sat last and picked up the winner in the last half furlong. So I mean, that's pretty exceptional. Again, I'm not sure if that's 100%, but that's what I heard. Look, she's a very hard filly to find any flaws in. She looks exceptional. I know Ryan was very impressed with her, and look, what can I say? She just looked very, very good.
I know, Juki, you know, we spoke about the second horse in, Simon, as a sort of an each-way bet last week, and we postulated that maybe the favourite wouldn't stay, but obviously on her pedigree with her being a sister to Peachtree and that, and the way she settles in her races, we were kind of talking through her hoop, as it turned out. It was an awesome performance, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I mean, you have to at some stage just start to give her credit. You can pick holes in the form of the 1,000 guineas and indeed the Oaks. But she's after straying two fields in consecutive classics. So it's going to be very difficult for horses to give her away throughout the season if she decides to go into open company and all-age company. I mean, three-year-old fillies have such a savage record in the arc, and there's a reason for that, because the top-class ones get a big weight concession, and it's just really hard to give them the weight.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to see both Zarkava and Trev win it for the fillies in the arc. But it was another filly who took centre stage on Sunday, and this was an extraordinary race, Ashanti, on so many levels, particularly for the young man that's on the other end of the phone. Yeah, Donegal, you may not have listened last week, but if you did, you would have heard us talk about these three Irish fillies. And as it turns out, there was a neck and basically a nose and a head between Fancy Blue, Alpine Star, and Peaceful at the line. And over the course of that that brilliant finish to the race, you became a classic winning trainer. So congratulations for a start.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
You watched it at the track.
I was at Fairy House. I had a runner there, so that's where I watched it. As you said, it was a brilliant finish. I thought Pierre Charles gave her a lovely ride, and I think they're probably, you know, four classy fillies. Even though it was a bunch finish, I wouldn't be surprised to see the form stand up quite strongly. They were the four fancied ones, and they pulled well clear off a slow pace. So, it was a great day. Obviously great for all my team back home, and delighted to come out the right way at the photo finish.
Did you watch it on your phone or a TV? Because it was such a tight finish. It was kind of almost hard to tell who was even up.
Yeah, no, I saw it on a TV in the stand in Fairy House. So, I was lucky I got to see it. And, look, it was a shame to not be there, obviously. But I think we won't complain.
The sire of Fancy Blue, Deep Impact, would arguably go down as one of the more unlucky losers in the arc on his French raid. A very, very good horse. So where can Fancy Blue go next? Because you still got to be thinking a mile and a half is going to be well within her compass on pedigree.
Yeah, I think it is. I think she travelled very well and quickened really well in France. So, you know, I'm not sure she's crying out for it, but as you said, I think she probably will get it. We're thinking possibly the Nassau next in Goodwood. Again, that's not set in stone. It just gives her an extra week. And you know, look, it's a long season, and there's a lot of international races that we might target later on in the season. So, you know, we don't want to overdo her too much. So just giving her an extra week after the race will help her, and obviously not up to 12 furlongs yet. That's what we're thinking, but not set in stone yet.
It's kind of unbeknownst to people maybe that it took you a while to get your first turf winner, but your last three horses in turf have all won, and one of those was Shale, who's an impeccably bred horse as well, out of a brilliant mare. And that performance at Gorn under Gavin Ryan was really, really encouraging, I thought, last evening.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good performance, and we weren't sure about the ground. It had gone soft, nearly heavy there. She's a very good moving filly, but her mother was the same. She was a very low moving filly and yet went in the ground. So, she seemed to handle it okay. I thought Gavin gave her a lovely ride, and she pulled nicely clear the last furlong. So it was a smart performance, and we're looking forward to stepping up in class.
How good could she be?
Look, with a pedigree like that, and after winning the maiden impressively second time out, you know, she could be very good. It's impossible to tell at this stage. Obviously, she'd have to keep improving, but I think there's a lot of potential there.
Do you find with these Galileos that they're hard to get fully ripe first time out? I know your dad sort of trains them to improve at run to run, but her progression from Leopardstown was kind of in tune with that as well. It was just a much, much sharper run on her second start.
I don't think she wasn't particularly green first time out. It was just a mess of a race. They hacked and she stuck wide and they quickened away from her. It was probably a hot race as well. I think Dad trains them that way to improve, and probably when you train them that way, there ended up being more improvement in them than if you have them drilled first time out. So I think you can get them ready if you want them ready. But I think a lot of them, if they get beaten a maiden first time out, it can also do them good because they tend to have an easier race their second run rather than stepping up to group company in their second run, you know. So I think there's a lot of benefits to not having them completely drilled first time.
He talks a good game, Juki, and he's a classic winning trainer who's had his last three runners have all won.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't lack confidence. But of course, we should realise that he didn't lack confidence because he faced that Derby dilemma on La Trobe once, where he had to throw Plan A out the window and go to a drastic change to Plan B because he realised the pace was all wrong. So it would have been interesting to see what he might have done in the Derby. But you've got to back yourself. I suppose as a jockey and a trainer, you've got to back yourself and face the consequences.
How have you found dealing with such big, powerful owners, Dunica, so early in your career? Now, obviously, you've trained a classic winner for Coolmore. And what's it been like, the journey so far?
Oh, it's been great. It's like, I say it the whole time, but it really is true. They're so easy to work for, whether it's to ride for them or train for them. You know, both the Magner, Smith and Tabor families, they're so good to me. And never put any pressure on me. So, look, it's, you know, I'm well aware of how lucky I am to have these horses at this age. And, I can't thank them enough for the opportunities they give me.
Have you made many changes in terms of your facilities there in Golden? Or was it kind of all sort of laid out for you when you got there?
Look, it was pretty much laid out. Obviously, David was there and it's a beautiful place. And he had it set up lovely. We've recently added a spa, which is a help. We drained some of the grass gallops and just topped up the wood chips and things like that. So you're always trying to improve little things, but the blueprint was there. David had it all set up. So, you know, as I said, I'm very lucky.
Has the training game surprised you in any way, or has it gone roughly as you expected so far?
Look, I don't think I could say that I expected to have a classic winner in my first year. But everything's gone smooth. I have great people working with me. And I know everyone says that, but it really is true. Everything's gone great so far, thank God.
Is it easy to be a boss, considering you're so young and you've obviously more elderly people working under you? And has it been smooth in that regard in terms of delegating responsibility and all that?
Yeah, it has. Look, again, it comes back to the people that are working with me. You know, they're very understanding, and you know, it would be very easy for them to not be happy with someone that's younger than them, obviously asking them to do things. But they've been so good, and that's what makes all the difference.
It's going to be a long career for him, Juki, you'd imagine.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? I mean, it could be a 60-year career. I can't predict 60 days down the track the way things are at the moment, Johnny. But yes, you would think all things being equal, if he's lucky in life, it's going to be a long career. And I hope he has a long career, because that means that I should knock another 40 out of it before the world comes crashing down.
Yeah. Well, I'm not even sure about that either. But it must have been special as well, Dunica, just for that first time you spoke to your dad after the race on Sunday, you know, because he's experienced this time and time again. He experienced it, obviously, on Friday. He experienced it twice on Saturday with both races on. But to be congratulated by your father, well done, and win the Group One must have been pretty special as well.
Yeah, exactly. He's obviously great to us, and he's always delighted when we win. We're all, if you know, he's the same. If he doesn't win, he wants us to win, and if we don't win, we want him to win. So no, as you said, it was quite special.
And Joseph isn't doing too bad as well.
No, yeah, he's what he's done is incredible. I suppose I'm lucky in that I've been given a facility and some very well bred horses. But in fairness to Joseph, he pretty much set it up his own thing, and he's he has a lot of outside owners and he's worked very hard to get to how successful he is. So I think people, when they say I got handed on the plate, they probably have a good argument. But with Joseph, I think it's very unfair to suggest things like that.
And just in terms of your team then for the season, how are they split between sort of 2-year-olds and older horses?
I've mainly probably 2-year-olds. I only have 8 older horses riding out at the minute, and about 15 or 20 2-year-olds. So look, it's not a big team, but we're lucky in that we have some quality in it.
And what sort of pedigrees do those 2-year-olds have then?
Well, look, they have incredible pedigrees. I mean, you can see that from the horses I've run already. Look, they're very well bred horses, and I'm lucky to have them, and we just have to do the best job we can with them.
And what have you got for the weekend to look forward to then?
Oh, I have a nice Australia horse running today. He won't like the ground, but he's a nice horse. He'll be a lovely horse next year.
Fernando Vici.
Yeah, I don't have much the weekend. I have a nice little Zoffany horse running in Leopardstown Saturday. Had a good run in Limerick first time. He could go close. And then I'll possibly have a 2-year-old Sunday in Cork. But I think that's it.
What horses are you mainly looking forward to then, beyond Fancy Blue and obviously the filly that won at Gorn?
Look, I've some very nice 2-year-old fillies that haven't run yet, that'll probably be coming out in the next few weeks. As I said, the Australia horse today, I like him a lot. There's probably a good chance he'll be a bit green today and might like the ground, but I like him for the future. And as I said, I have a few nice 2-year-olds to come out as well. So obviously them and the obvious ones, you know, Fancy Blue and the filly and even Southern Cape yesterday as well.
And would you like to see the Fancy Blue stay in training next year, or is that a long way away?
It's a long way away. Of course, I'd love to have her next year. But look, anything can happen between now and the end of the season. But if she's still in good form and she's healthy and happy, I'd love to have her next year. But look, that's up to the owners, and we can have a talk about that closer to the time.
And do you take, I suppose, finally, do you take defeats well as a trainer, because you're obviously going to have more of them than victories?
Yeah, I do. I think when you're riding, I was a bad loser. I think you often blame yourself when you're riding, that I could have done this wrong, I could have done that wrong. Kind of when you're training, it nearly, well, I'm sure it is your responsibility, but at the same time, it's not you're not blaming yourself on the day, if that makes sense. You kind of just take them back and reevaluate and kind of try and change things up. So it's probably, and look, as you said, you're going to lose a hell of a lot more than you're going to win in this game. So I've become pretty used to it by now.
Juki, as a son of a famous trainer as well, have you any words of advice to a fellow, high achieving son of a trainer?
Yes, thanks very much for that, Johnny. Yeah, we're like peas in a pod, myself and Dunica. I would struggle to advise him. I'm a bit curious, actually, though, about do you ride out at all anymore, Dunica, or have you sacked the riding off altogether?
Rarely. I do sometimes, just rarely, for the reason that when you're riding a horse on a lot, pretty much you can't see the rest of the lot. You can't see how they're moving and how happy they are. So I try and not ride out so that I can see the rest of them. But I do ride out every so often, mainly on maybe a Sunday when I have less staff. Things like that, but I try not to, just because you see more when you're on the ground.
And do you miss the riding? Do you miss the riding? Sorry, Dunica.
I mean, you do. I'd have loved to have been in Epsom the weekend, but at the same time, you know, I don't miss traveling around Ireland, you know, doing lightweights. I don't miss that part of it, but of course you miss it on the big days. There's nothing like the buzz you get from riding in them big races. So I do miss it a bit, but at the same time, I think I made the right decision.
Final question for you, Juki. It sounds like he's had those indicators on for a while.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, it's probably the hazard lights, because he's pulled over for this conversation. Yeah. So that's so the Road Safety Authority, we should be getting sponsored by them. But exactly. One last quick point for Dunica. So I know you're missing the buzz of riding. Are you enjoying the buzz of having three square meals a day?
Do you know what? It's completely becomes a non-issue when you're not thinking about it. And that's the truth. I'd say I'm probably eating less now than when I was riding, when I was able to eat, if that makes
no
sense.
No way.
What? Yeah. I'm not eating less than I was when I was riding, but say if I had a week off in the middle of a season, I'd eat a lot more than I am now, because it's a non-issue now. It's not something that I think of, and it's not something that's on my mind. So it's just, you know, I think I'm the same as everyone else now.
Think of that, Juki, as you're slobbering over a Zaytoun's meal after your next night out in town.
Well, actually, I'm going to Shelburne Park on Friday for dinner and a few drinks, like a human, like a gregarious human. So I will think about that. Okay, right.
Yeah. Thanks a million for your time, Dunica.
No bother, lads.
Top man, top
man. Thank you, Dunica. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Dunica, Juki, he's just a good old chap, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's so unusual. You do hear people say, he's definitely a Crowley, whereas Joseph is more a chip off Aidan's block. I'd say, speaking as a media man, you find Dunica probably an easier, more illuminating interview. I certainly find him easier to listen to.
Yeah, I think Joseph's actually a good interview, and I think when we had him on there earlier in the year during lockdown, I thought he was very open. But they're different characters. And what I like about Dunica is, you know, that glib comment he gave to our own Lydia Hislop at the time when he described his best attribute as being Aidan O'Brien's son. And, you know, as Jim Bulger said, it helps when you have the horses when we discuss them. Obviously, he's been handed these Galileos with these amazing pedigrees, a deep impact. It's, you know, anyone would kill for a deep impact. And he has landed on his feet with these horses. So it's kind of a little bit like replacing Alex Ferguson as a manager, maybe, rather than starting from scratch. You've just been given this amazing artillery. But there's a massive expectation there. So he does have to deliver, I suppose.
Yeah, that's quite interesting as well, because, I mean, I could be totally wrong. He might have exactly the same temperament as his brother and his dad. But he strikes me as having a slightly different temperament. So will he have a slightly different training style? I really look at it and say, well, it's very hard to improve on my dad. I've got the pedigrees. I'll just do what he does. I feel like my sense is he obviously won't do anything radically different, because why would you? He'd want to be insane. He's clearly not insane. But I think he will put his own little brushstrokes on it.
Where's the fun in just aping your dad?
Yes, but still, it must be a temptation at the same time. Like young Bruegel the elder had a great career, and then Bruegel the younger came along. Now, I don't know enough about art to tell you, did Bruegel the younger do anything different? But he probably just thought to himself, I'll just keep this ticking along and let the royalty stack up. But I suspect Dunica, I will follow his career with interest, and it should be a long career, as you mentioned. And we'll see if we can spot the subtle differences between himself and his dad.
Absolutely. What do you make of the July Cup? Because I think Skeptical has a massive chance here. I know three-year-olds have a brilliant record in the race. Clive Cox's horse, Golden Horde, his dad actually won the race as well, which, so plenty of positives in terms of his chance. But I think I was speaking to Jim Goff, who's involved with Skeptical, and essentially he relayed that Frankie Dettori would have ridden the race differently if he had known the horse from Royal Ascot, and that he can reverse the form. He wouldn't want too much rain, and it is good to soft at the moment, I think. So he'd want it on the good side. I think if it isn't the good side, he's a great chance. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think it probably will be on the good side looking at the forecast. I mean, Newmarket is one of the driest places in England. This rain just came yesterday. So I think by the time Saturday comes around, it'll be good ground. The race would be run a couple of seconds quicker than the six furlongs in Ascot. Obviously, it's an easier six furlongs on the July course. I think I will go in again. I backed him in Ascot. I thought he ran a huge race on that stiff course. If he gets his good ground, which I suspect he will, I'm not convinced about that Commonwealth Cup form. I didn't think it was much of a race going into it, but the horse I was most interested in was Roger Varian's horse. He finished last. Mill-Isle ran okay. Mill-Isle did run okay in Nace at the weekend.
So
I might be being a bit harsh, but I'll take a chance at Skeptical. He's about 7-2, 4-1. That'll do for me.
Juki and I are going to put our teeth into the Irish action. But before that, here is the Joy of Six this week, and it is in form current trainer Johnny Levins.
Favourite race course and why? The Curra, you've got the best horses run there, as all the classics are there. Not something I agree with, but the best take each other on in the classics, so it would have to be the Curra. Favourite race horse and why? Frankel, his ability along with his competitiveness is very rare. He always ran through the line, and some of his performances made the hair stand on the back of your neck, notably the Guineas and the Judgment International. One change I would make to racing. Stricter stewarding on the interference rules. These inquiries should be held without the presence of the jockeys involved. It's a very serious rule. And I feel we are in the position Formula One was in the early 90s when it took their champion driver to lose his life before they copped on. So that's the change I would make there. Best bet. My best bet would have to be Serpentine. I felt there was a lot of doubtful stares in the Derby, and a lot of them would have been riding hold-up horses and riding waiting races on them. And I just thought Serpentine being a proven stayer and a front runner, I just thought if Emma got his fractions right, that he actually would be getting, a good horse would be getting a bit of a freebie and just something you can't do. So that was my best bet. Horse to look out for this season, I'm going to say Aidan McGuinness's horse, Laugh a Minute. He's a handicapper presence, but I think he could potentially develop into a group horse. I've been impressed with him lately. Best horse this weekend. My best this weekend, I have quite a few runners, but I've nothing really stand out that I really fancy strongly. A lot of them have chances, and with normal luck, I might have a winner. So to that extent, I'm going to go with Penetubo in the pre-Jean Pratt for Charlie Appleby.
Now, Juki, this reminds me a little bit of a certain horse whose name can never be mentioned at Gordon Elliott Stable tours if the horse isn't ready, because he doesn't like really LeBake being brought into conversation for obvious reasons, despite the fact he was actually a Supreme Novice winner. But anyway, you know, the amount of aftertime and after LeBake won the Supreme 25-1 shot, so on and so forth, not only did Dunica tell lads to back the winner of the Derby, Johnny Levin's only backed it himself. I mean, what are the odds? Like, that's about 30, about 1,000-1 that both of them would have backed us.
Yeah, he made a good case. I thought there would be more competition for the lead in the Derby looking at it beforehand. But he obviously saw what could potentially transpire and did ultimately transpire. So very good work from the Levins, but it's after time, and though we kind of have a zero tolerance policy on after time, don't we?
We do, and we badly need a certain Twitter account back. But I want to talk about Kilbeggan, because what are the odds, Juki, of Kilbeggan racing on the 10th of July And you've Super Sunday running, you have Yanworth running, and you have Mengli Khan running. Now, in terms of the order of where their careers has gone, I'm not sure what's going on there. Mengli Khan, I think, would struggle to win a walkover at the moment. But Super Sunday, running in a conditions hurdle for south of 10 grand, 154, running against Mengli Khan at 142. I mean, it's like the cliche, there are no easy games in international football. Obviously, there are. But this is a hell of a race, Shuki. The KilbeganRaces.com hurdle. You'd imagine they could have gotten it sponsored with that lineup. But in any event, the 5:55 at Kilbegan is a hell of a race.
Yes, it is. I mean, the people who circled that race in the calendar and thought we might get a relatively easy conditions race in summer jumping have been badly mistaken. I'm not sure what the thinking is with Super Sunday. But I suppose he's getting on at this stage, so they might as well run away, and he take a lot of beating. I didn't look the race too closely, but off the top of my head, he should be winning that, right?
44 grand and change for the winner of the AXA Farm Insurance Midlands National, which is, I have to say, actually a very, very competitive renewal, and it's going to be a great spectacle around Kilbegan, but... on the basis that I suspect neither of us actually fancies anything strongly, Kilbegan, Juki, let's talk headquarters. And the Curragh, obviously, was a scatter of maidens to start things. Three maidens to kick off matters at the Curragh. A horse that was actually quite interesting is this Monosib, who runs in the 4:15, the two-year-old EBF maiden. And this is a horse that Kevin Prendergast trains, who actually finished last or thereabouts on debut. But Warfront is the sire of the potential favourite Irish Chief, which is an immediate negative for me. But that might set up the market for Monosib. I don't think Kevin's had a winner yet, but this would be a nice start. This horse actually ran a lovely race first time out. Very well bred on the dam side. Not sure if the sire Bobby's Kitten has achieved much over here, but the Curragh is a fascinating card.
Yes, I had a look at the maidens and I saw some interesting horses, but I didn't see any bets. But I did see a couple of bets in the 6:15. This Nam, very eye-catching comeback at Mays recently.
I've been to the Nam. I've just been to the Nam, Cheltenham. Bit of a gag there, when a battered man gets off a plane. I've just been to the Nam, Cheltenham, of course, particularly battered this year, Juki.
We had very different experiences over in Cheltenham this year. I found it a serene Buddhist experience, whereas you were doing your nut come the Thursday. And that would be more of a reflection, a better reflection on you, of course. You were certainly very empathic with the times, whereas I was just living in the Cheltenham bubble. It was a beautiful bubble to live in as well. I'd go tomorrow if I got the chance. But anyway, the Nam. Yes, very encouraging comeback at Mays Street. He suffered interference at the start and was a little bit short of room, about two furlongs down. Entitled to come on for that run, although a repeat might be good enough. Good draw and rated 64 in a 45-65. Me likey. And in the following race, the 6:45, the Blair Main back at his beloved Curragh. So last year, Blair Main had his seasonal comeback in Nace, finished fifth, went on then. On a second run at the Curragh over six furlongs and did the business. This year, an even more encouraging comeback in Nace a few days ago, finished third. He won off 79 and 80 last year at the Curragh. He just seems to absolutely love this place. He's off 82. He's had that run to knock the cobwebs off him, and I thought he'd be winning.
I absolutely love Italians. I love Italy. And Natalia Lupini, the Italian trainer, only a handful of horses, does a very nice job, though, and trains Blair Main. I tell you what, interesting horse, Juki, purely on the naming alone. I mean, who better to own a horse called Feminism than Sheikh Mohammed? And, of course, Feminism runs in the 4:45, but runs against, have you any knowledge of this Never Forgotten, who's a Galileo filly out of Ishvana, who's a Holy Roman Emperor filly for the O'Briens? Now, Never Forgotten would, as such, be sort of closely related to Dunica's very good winner at Gorn. And it was at Gorn that Never Forgotten actually started out in a maiden that was won by the very promising Rocaroma. And this, like, she was so green. She looked almost unsteerable at times. Hand ride from DP McDonough. Lovely finish to the race. And I like her each way claims in the 4:45. Do you have anything more for us?
No, that was it at the curve. But you make a compelling case for that filly second time up. I'll have a closer look at that.
So Leopardstown, I'm not going to say it's disappointing at Leopardstown, the feature medal stakes, a Group 3 race. And it's not a disappointing race because it's actually a cracker. And we have a fascinating raider coming over who probably will take the beating. But just in terms of the entries, Juki, Albina was entered in this. I thought she might run. She may now run in the Irish Oaks, presumably, if she don't go here, which she doesn't. Mad Moon was entered for the indefatigable Kevin Prendergast. He don't run either. But Zabil Prince does, the Luke de Vega gelding, who's coming over here with a lofty rating of only 117 and CT Keen in the plate. What's not to like?
What's not to like, exactly? A Group 1 winner in France last season. Form tailed off a little bit after that, but that he kept some really, really hot company. Patrick Sarsfield is an improving horse, there's no doubt about it, but he's probably run into impermeable rock in the shape of Zabil Prince.
Well, it's going to be interesting, isn't it, though? Because the Sarsfield, you know, he's coming from his handicap route. And I thought at Navan the last day, I may even have been saying this to you, I was like, this horse, or I was saying it to actually the lad watching the race for me, I was saying that when he came off the bridle, it was like, he's probably okay. He gives me the impression of a horse who kind of has a good bit in the locker if needs be. He's a really progressive Australia. And actually on ratings, he doesn't have a massive amount to find considering that, you know, he's race fit, which Zabil Prince isn't.
Well, Zabil Prince has a wicked record fresh. He's a horse who wins an awful lot of races, but I'd say he'd be pretty straight for this assignment. And Patrick Sarsfield is getting that mark out of a handicap. So while it only looks like 7 or 8 pounds, which is still not nothing, it's probably more again. It's a really big ask for him. If he can turn over Zabil Prince, he's a horse going places in a hurry.
I've a nap at Leopardstown, which we can give in due course. I first of all want to mention that Dundalk is back on Sunday, Juki.
Oh yes, your beloved Dundalk, and a bit of a coup for them getting the Ballysacks. You must be delighted.
Well, a man who's particularly delighted is the CEO of Dundalk, and that's Jim Martin.
Yeah, it's great to be back racing on Sunday. This 12th of July fixture for decades has been the best attended meeting in Dundalk, so it definitely would be strange to be having it behind closed doors. In the 4 months since we raced last, we've replaced the complete racing surface at a cost of excess of $2 million. We again went for Martin Collins Polytrack and we're delighted with the results. IHRB ran a trial day on it on the 16th of June and the feedback we got from jockeys and trainers was very, very positive. The Woodford Reserve's Ballysack Stakes is the feature race on Sunday. This is the second Kentucky Derby qualifier that we've run at the track this year. Crossfire Hurricane won the first in February. And Churchill Downs contacted us and asked us, could we run a qualifier on the 12th of July? And thanks to the cooperation of Horse Racing Ireland and Leopardstown, the Ballysack Stakes was transferred to Dundalk for this meeting. I've just had a look at the entries and they're very exciting and hopefully the winner of the race on Sunday will take his place in the Kentucky Derby on the 5th of September.
Well, I am intrigued to see what the reaction is. There'll be plenty of criticism for Dundalk surface, a bit like the AstroTurf. If you play Astro, after a while it just gets worn down. They have a new surface in, lots of money spent, Juki.
Yes, great. They should have plenty of money to spend on it because they've so many fixtures, so they're getting the media rights money. So it seems to have taken an inordinate amount of time, but obviously they didn't think it was as bad as the trainers were. Am I right in saying there were a couple of trainers boycotted the track because?
Yeah, I thought there was you are right. I thought it was a lot of nonsense, to be honest, and there are a lot of other trainers who are quite happy to run us there. But it might have been a ploy to get Dundalk into action. But I am intrigued by the surface. I'm a big fan of Dundalk. Juki, it's nap time.
It's nap time. Well, just before nap time, because unfortunately I've ruined it by mentioning Blairmain, but Blairmain at the 6:45 at the Curra is my nap. But just to touch on Leopardstown, I know you're going to nap something there. You see, Rekindling is in the Qualified Riders race, and See the Line is in. It's a little bit like your conditions hurdle down in Kiltbeggan. Imagine I was going to mention that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine a Melbourne. I've stolen your thunder, but a Melbourne Cup winner and a horse was placed in the Ebor, getting it on in that qualified riders race, I thought was interesting.
It's going to be a cracking card at Leopardstown. My nap is share the honour in the 3:45. First of all, he's ridden by Dylan McMonagall, who's, I think, very good value for the 7. He was he might have won the Dingle Derby at 12 years of age, this fella. Spoke to him there last week. He's totally beyond his years, Duke. He was a brilliant boxer as a kid. He's a really, really good rider from Donegal, where they love their pony racing up there. But I think Harvey, Tony Martin, whose horses are in great nick all of a sudden, did me for a few bob there at Bellewstown with a horse that was 40-1 or something. In any event, Harvey's horses are going well, and Share the Honour ran a lovely prep behind Pearl Warrior recently enough at Fairy House and Good to Firm. The rain that we've had will suit this strong travelling son of Shamardal, who's a decent draw and has gone well at Leopardstown before, Juki. So, yeah, I like this horse's chance, I have to say. I think he'll go very well.
Excellent. And I see he's rated 75 and a 45-75. So we love that. Back the best horse in the race. Easy game, Johnny.
Yeah, he was 3-1 Cool Poet last year in Galway, rated 78. But I think factoring in the £7 that the little kid takes off, massive chance. So that's about it, Juki.
That's about it. I had a look at Cork on Sunday. The Brownstown Stakes is a race that looks to have a lot of holes in it, and probably a horse to fill that hole. Those holes would be unbelievable. I've forgotten her name. Surrounding Alfred's mare, who's rock solid. That was the
daughter of had.
Yeah. But she's just so solid crew, and that's an odd looking race. But that's all. Yeah. So that's it. So any excitement for the weekend?
Not really. No, it's kind of slightly up in the air. But I am looking forward to the race, and I am really looking forward to the July Cup. I'm particularly looking forward to the Dante, which is going to be run shortly after we hang up the phone here. And Duke, thanks for coming on.
Not at all, Johnny. Thank you. Bye bye.
And thanks to Jim Martin, thanks to John Levins, and also thanks to Donal O'Brien. And hopefully we'll chat to you next week.
Visit barwinracing.com for best odds guaranteed and extra places every day on UK and Irish horse racing, extra places every week on major golf events, and double the odds on first goal score bets on selected games. Barwin Racing, your number one bookmaker, where the customer comes first. And remember to check us out on social media. At Barwin Racing is the Twitter handle to follow, where you'll find our daily specials on a range of sports.